Bujari Gamarawa, and if you're learning alongside me, that is Good Day in Gadigal. I acknowledge the unceded land that I am on, Gadigal country, as part of the Eora Nation, and pay my immense respects and gratitude to elders past, present, and emerging as the true custodians of this land that I'm on. My name is Nadia Felsch. I'm a fat positive feminist nutritionist and certified intuitive eating counselor. And in this podcast, we explore the practical aspects of leaving the diet mentality behind and finding your own food and body freedom. I'm going to explore some tough topics and possibly some triggering areas in this episode: sexual violence, mental health, weight, and appearance chat generally. So please take the care that you need for yourself. So in this episode, I want to get personal, more in fact than I have done before. I want to share with you my own body acceptance story. This is a fairly exposing episode. I am kind of hiding and excited and all of the feelings. I want to peel back with you the layers of what my journey with my body image, my body acceptance has looked like, and some of the key points that helped me arrive where I am today, where the way that I view my body, even when it isn't positive, isn't all that I am. Really sharing with you how my body acceptance story is my self-acceptance story, and sharing what I notice in the world around me, from reality TV to the gym floor. I have thought about this episode and whether or not I should share my story in this way with thousands of people or not. I've thought about that. I've probably overthought it, to be honest. And I also think that's important to consider that I am a human with multiple privileged identities, and those identities, those privileges directly impact my journey, like privilege or the lack of it does for all of us. So I do acknowledge that and the impact that that can have, which I will reflect more, you know, as I share, as I speak. My story might not reflect yours. It might not be one that you relate to. That is okay. Your story and your struggles are valid. Mine or anyone else's doesn't change that. Where I have come to is that I believe all our stories are valid, and hearing other people's, you know, stories and reflections, even when they reflect part of our own, is so incredibly powerful. I have felt that myself reading and hearing from other people. I feel like it can lift this burden that we feel, where we can feel alone, we can feel isolated in what we're experiencing in our struggles. It can give voice, it can give perspective to our challenges, and it can bring the shame that we can feel from the darkness about our bodies. So many of the experiences that I'm going to share as well, like into the light. We can feel empowered in our own reflections then and actions moving forward. This is part one of my body acceptance story. So let's get into it. Once upon a time, not really, I was a really active, energetic, and curious kid. I was confident. I had a general belief in my abilities. And I want to kind of let's kick into this. I want to invite you to consider for a moment what it might have taken for me to possess that, or at least not yet have lost it, is another way to think of it. So what unearned privileges might I have been benefiting from even as a kid? As a kid, I was also lonely and I was sad a lot of the time. And I now understand I was struggling with my mental health from a very young age. In many ways, my confidence, I can now understand, was a mask, because I lacked the language to explain how I was feeling inside, and I also didn't ever think to share it with people. You know, adults and kids around me, they all responded to my confidence and my bubbliness with positivity, so I kind of just kept rolling with it. As an active kid, swimming was my sport of focus. So from around the age of like 7 or 8, I gratefully have no memory of being ashamed or even self-conscious of being in my swimmers. And I was in them a lot, you know, on a regular basis, most afternoons for a big chunk of my childhood. So again, what unearned privileges might I have been benefiting from in order to experience this? I was white, thin, able-bodied, and a cis girl. So I also happened to be a strong swimmer, something else that I know added to my sense of belonging and okayness at that point, and possibly lack of self-consciousness in my own body. I grew up until I was 9 with my older sister and my mom at home. I don't recall any overt or explicit conversations about our bodies. I don't recall any explicit body or toxic food chat in our home. I don't recall being compared to my own sister, and we do have remarkably different body types. I don't recall bodies being really that centered at all in discussions or conversations, you know, beyond, I guess, ability and competition, which is something that would stay with me. My mom, partly by way of her being vegetarian and partly by me eating a total of like 10 foods when I was a kid, we did often eat separately or separate meals. And even that, I don't recall this being like a thing. I know that I thought of it like mom liked what she liked and I liked what I like, and it wasn't the same. We didn't have a scale in our house, and I don't recall weight being like a part of my general life. My mum was involved in the fitness industry from when I was very young, and at that time as an aerobics and a group fitness instructor through the 80s and the 90s. And again, even from that kind of experience and exposure, and I was in that environment, I was in a gym environment as a kid, I can't say that I took in much explicitly about bodies, right? Implicitly, sure, but not explicitly. It was mum's job, you know, seeing her in that environment. I thought it was really cool. I'm an OG grapeviner over here. Mum, I don't recall her speaking negatively about her body or others, or again, even like focusing that much on them. I think it wasn't like there was so much room for this to be different, and I'm grateful to say that it wasn't. As I grew, as I was surrounded by other family members, I was really close to my maternal grandmother. Again, I still don't have memories of experiences that centered weight, that made commentary on body change. And mine, of course, you know, it was. I was growing. I was a kid into a tween, into a teen. And also, I think it might be natural to follow here, I don't recall thinking that much about either mine or anyone's bodies for a lot or you know, all of my younger life. I had one, I did stuff with it, but I know I was called pretty or beautiful by family members, and I know that felt good. So of note here, I have come to see the impact of my mum not being someone as well who spent a great deal of time on her appearance. My grandmother, again, the same. Now, both of them took, and in my mum's case still do, hi mum, I know you're listening, they both took, and again, still do in mum's case, pride in their presentation, whatever that meant to them. But, you know, I didn't see lots of makeup or hairstyling. These were not huge parts of their lives. And that absolutely, I think, has been a positive impact for me, because it normalized that was okay. It was no big deal. It wasn't expected to show up in the world in a certain look. Now, I can't pinpoint anything exact, but I know that somewhere around my tweens, so, you know, 11 or 12 years old, maybe, I, as many girls do, I started to become more conscious of my body compared to others. And I know that this didn't always feel okay, right? Because comparison is one thing. The feelings we associate it with are another layer to that. So I know that upon many occasions that I sat cross-legged, as, you know, like I feel like every school kid gets asked to do, I know that on so many occasions I would notice that my legs would bulge where others didn't. So like my thigh and my calf, I don't even know if those names were clear to me, but like that part of my leg was bulging. And notably, I was only comparing this element of my experience and my leg to other girls. So not to boys. Didn't even know what they were doing or what they were looking like. I was only looking at girls. That's important. And I can now understand this as me already carrying a fat bias, where whilst I wasn't objectively fat, I saw a less bulging leg as thinner, so in someone else, and that meant to me better. I already knew that meant better. So how had my little brain already decided this? It's wild. From about the age of 10, I was also what would be described as like quote unquote boy crazy. That is, in my opinion, a very problematic term. It shames women. But with my softer and wiser adult eyes, I can see the complications of this desire for attention from boys and men and the focus on them as my very valid human desire to be loved. I mention this because I had already, you know, I'd picked up on, for instance, in this interaction, in this exchange, in this focus, the so-called power of men in the world. You know, like that's where to put your energy and focus. I was already clear on that from about the age of 10, right? What does that say? Why wasn't I putting that energy and that focus into other parts of my life? Now, this is all, again, complex. It's not entirely for this episode or this focus. And it is important to note that I didn't at this age, despite my focus on boys and getting attention from them, and by attention, I simply mean like noticing them and, you know, being smiled at and that kind of thing. I at this age, I didn't believe that my appearance did or didn't grant me attention from boys. So what I'm saying is I didn't think in terms of, am I attractive enough for them to like me? And I'm going to come back to this. I also can acknowledge that somewhere around this time and really continuing into my early teen years, I was conscious that I wasn't the thinnest girl. I wasn't ever the thinnest girl. And I know that that wasn't comfortable for me. So again, like there's noticing, there's comparison, and then there's the feelings as a different layer. So both my unearned privileges and I think a lot of the buffering factors from my home life that I've talked about meant that I didn't actually focus or think too much about this all, you know, at the same time. So it was there. It was more something that I like knew to be true. And it was like in the background of my life as I was growing up, rather than it being anything that I focused on. I can see how this extended and rooted itself into more sinister and more self-limiting beliefs about who I was and my being and my existence throughout high school. And yet it was still somewhat at the same time soft and in the background that, you know, these kind of beliefs like I'd probably be more popular, I'd be more liked because, you know, isn't that the goal of every teenager if I was thinner? You know, there is that really close association that like, how did I know that? You know, and there's a million reasons why I knew that we all have known that. I was also continuing to, and this is a real shift, I was continuing to soak up and soak in the praise and the compliments about my appearance and my body specifically from boys and men. That really was a shift in teenagehood. And I can see now, to be honest, I think even then I was conscious that my appearance granted me attention from the male gaze. I'm going to come back to that kind of terminology. So, and 100% I leaned into that. I was still seeking and desiring that valid need to be loved. I was now, you know, differently to my youth, you know, now at this point in my teens, I'm saying differently to when I was younger, I was now linking attractiveness to the male gaze, according to the male gaze, and linking that to attention, to desire, to being good enough. So that was absolutely kind of cementing in this point of my life. And I can see how this also became very complicated and my body also therefore becoming like at the same time desired and validated, but a source of shame. You know, and for me, this is through multiple sexual violences that I experienced in my teens, because I caused these rapes, right? Because attention from men, from my body is my fault, right? And this is hard stuff. And for sure, it is still something that I grapple with, you know, in terms of parts of my body that feel inherently sexualized because they are, because they were. And that's all the way back to being 11 years old and boys in my school non-consensually snapping my bra, like the back of my bra at school, and mocking me for having one, for having breasts, for developing in a body. That is not my choice, right? These layers are deep and complicated. And another complicated layer being that I was physically assaulted by two boys as a 10-year-old girl most days of grade four. And my body and my gender felt central to all of that. Even then, I felt that way. There was this voicelessness of all of it. You know, it's like, here's my body. It's kind of not mine, but it's the reason I get attention and shame and feel all these complicated things as a child, right? There was a considerable shift in the way that I was viewing myself and my body, you know, the amount of space that it took up in my brain. I've said how it's kind of, it was somewhat in the background. It was like the you know, the soundtrack to life was knowing all of this and like thin is better and, you know, like attention and, you know, that was there. But after a relationship that I was in with a man between, you know, I was about 19 to 20, there was a shift. He was incredibly body focused on his and on everyone else's, as it, you know, commonly goes. I didn't realize it then because I don't think I was carrying those same views with me. It wasn't as prominent for me coming into that relationship with him. And he masked a lot of this focus in capital H health, you know, well-being. And I do know at that time, all of that actually made a lot of sense to me. You know, this is another complicated layer that actually would remain with me for a long time. Because when I met him, I was smoking a pack of cigarettes a day and I had pretty limited health promoting practices in my life. I was, you know, that was not really a part of my life, how he was living. My mental health had started to stabilize at that age after an incredibly low period and a really rough period from 17 to 19 when I was, you know, that's when I started having panic attacks and navigating phobias and anxiety. I remember him saying to me once, at least once, that my legs were not toned. That was the word he used. You know, you could probably imagine. I thought about that a lot. It's still with me at some level. I immediately felt ashamed. I know it felt awful. And I think at the same time, it was still somewhat buffered. I was still somewhat protected by knowing that I was still enough, though deeply uncomfortable that he didn't see me as enough, because that's how I took that. And that man will actually return to my story later on. So throughout my early 20s, I can now see through photos that my body and appearance actually changed quite considerably. And I mention this because at the time, it actually was not clear to me that it had. I was not intentionally trying to change my body. And again, what unearned privileges might I have been benefiting from, you know, to not even notice, but also what protective factors were in place that I wasn't focused on this and I wasn't intending for this change to happen. So both of those are true. At age 20, I was in the thinnest body that I have ever been in. And it's only actually years later when I was really deep in my own struggles that I realized this, because I was looking at photos and, you know, like obsessing over why can't I look like that again? And that's kind of when I realized I didn't know I had been that thin. You know, my mental health was completely treacherous at that time. And to me, the appearance of my body and my body size and everything about my appearance reflects that to me, as does my mental health state, you know, almost in that opposite way, where that's part of why I wasn't cognizant, I think, of what was happening in my body and my changes, because it just was not a priority, you know, except there was one experience where I was preparing for my 21st birthday, which was quite the undertaking. It was quite the event. I treated it with a great reverence and I went dress shopping with my mom. Then the dress that I chose was stunning. I still think that. Love that dress. It was also the smallest size of clothing I had worn in my life. And I didn't try to be that body shape. I didn't try to be that size. I just was. But I do recall feeling as this combination, like as I was dressing and kind of taking myself in, I do remember this combination of both awe and pride. So let's kind of, you know, that's important to kind of have a critical analysis of I hadn't tried, but why was I feeling prideful about the size of the clothing? You know, my early 20s, I think, are most accurately characterized by the so-called like health kick, quote unquote, that I was on. I stopped smoking. I took up running. You know, I was giving greater attention now to my dietary pattern. I also did bake myself, and that's the verb here in solariums. If you're young enough, you might not even know what that is, which I think is very interesting because depending on, you know, where you're from in the world or what your life experience has been, I know I associated that glow with like being healthy. You know, that sun-kissed glow. Isn't it interesting what we tend to associate with the look, quote unquote, of health? But yet, you know, they are, I mean, they're banned in Australia at least because of their heightened risk of skin cancer. So like, that's just a wild situation. So all of this kind of health kick came in part from being diagnosed with polycystic ovarian syndrome and then insulin resistance in this kind of same period of time. So I know that both the medical fat phobia that I did face, but also the fear, the fear mongering that I was facing, navigating that diagnosis is kind of what led to some of those big changes in my habits and my behaviors. So moving back to Sydney after a few years that I was living away, again, I was working to stabilize my mental health and with an additional diagnosis now of inflammatory bowel disease. So what kind of is happening at this point is my body focus and my body awareness was ramping up. I remember hearing at this time, kind of mid-20s, that a friend of my mom's had commented on my weight to her. She commented that I had gained weight. And I remember hearing the story and feeling mortified. I felt completely exposed. I know where I was standing. Like it's a seminal moment. It felt like I had done something wrong. And, you know, truthfully, coming from my mom, that also felt challenging because did she think that too? And looking back in that moment, I'm asking myself, does this person therefore think less of me? That's how easy it is to make that jump or that link. And again, wild stuff, really hard stuff. So much of my identity in my 20s was, you know, really becoming about my appearance. I even did some amateur modeling and some promotional work here and there, which actually, interestingly, it enhanced my view of my body because there's so much validation. But at the same time, this is not liberation, and I will come back to that. It's key. But I added to this a layer that in the same way, like it felt the same in many ways is what I'm trying to say. I was in this kind of period of my life, I was the quote unquote healthy one. That really became wrapped up in my identity. My Instagram handle, get ready to cringe, for a while in 2013 was healthy fit one. Dead. I was competing in athletic events. I was hanging out with people who thought like I did. And this actually all kind of combined together was a really slippery slope. That whole time it was a slippery slope. And in all ways, it was about changing what I looked like with this undercurrent, this constant undercurrent of being thinner. You know, I had countless appointments with nutritionists, with dietitians, focusing on losing weight, being thinner. But I often would kind of talk about it like, well, then I'll run better and I'll be more efficient. You know, that I would interchange the language like constantly. You know, I had meal plans at this time. I was constantly counting what I ate. You know, I spent thousands of dollars wild on having these body scans that are accurate so that I could keep a check on my body fat percentage because I was so obsessed with that number. And I reasoned that the scale, like a, you know, general body scale was meaningless. I mean, that's true, except I hadn't quite the perspective that I do now at that time. I was intentionally manipulating my body and I thought about it all the damn time. And often, you know, like that past boyfriend had modeled to me, I was naming this health and fitness. I was almost purely assessing my fitness and my health based on these really arbitrary limited numbers, you know, beyond even just weight of my body, but like how fast can I run a particular distance? And I would be obsessed with that. And that meant everything. That was my identity. That was so much about my worth or how much weight of like a barbell I could lift off the ground. And by the age of 27, I was also grappling with this identity crisis because I no longer wanted to be this workaholic that I didn't realize I had even chosen to be. I became fixated then on one goal, one really murky goal at the same time, because now I was like, let's up the ante. You know, like I'm not going to be in this full-time corporate job. I'm not going to be working 80 hours a week. Let's be the healthiest and the thinnest me because they're the same, aren't they? Right? Yeah. This was, I can see now, as much about denial of discomfort of all these other parts of my life that were coming together, and it was just a lot. And it was as much about that as it was about control and the appeal that we all know so well of this paradise, this place. I'm going to talk about this a little bit, this place where we believe we will get to one day, where we will look good enough, when it is enough, when we can stop and we can relish in all the glory that we have been shown repeatedly in our lives comes with being in that place. That was my focus. Let's freaking get it. I remember a friend at that time in my life telling me, she intended it as a compliment, 100%. We had dinner one evening and she said, "I have never seen you look so thin." You know what? I barely took it in. Didn't really feel that excited, didn't feel that validated, mainly because all I was allowed that night, were the two boiled eggs that I had in my handbag and some water. I was hungry, I was miserable, I was fixated, I was a mess. I also, in that kind of same time, timeline, I remember confiding in another friend how unhappy I was, how fixated I was. I could recognize something wasn't right, but also how unwilling I was to not keep striving for this place with my body. It was both and. In that same year, my partner and I became engaged by choice together. And in starting those kind of conversations about our wedding, which was going to be the following year, I realized I actually didn't want that day and that experience, those celebrations, or even my life, beyond that day, to look like it looked right now in those moments. It felt like almost like this, I'm done. I have to put a stop to what I'm doing to myself. I actually had dragged him along part of this journey of, calorie counting, dedication in MyFitnessPal. Oh my goodness. The daily workouts, because you got to hit your calorie target. This kind of, you can only eat some foods because they're like toxic ones, quote unquote. Like, he was so supportive. He was so engaged. But I do want to say, I also never felt that he loved me more or less based on what was happening to my body. And I will come back to that belief. So at 28, I started to untangle myself, essentially. I was like, I got to end this. And what that really is untangling myself from a lifetime of implicit messages about bodies and about worthiness. And for me personally, a really intense decade almost of focusing on my body. How do I start to decenter that? Because clearly, I'm not happier for it. I am not better off for it. And I can't keep doing this, was how I was feeling. So it's at this point of my journey that my body did start to shift over time and in different ways. And I was noticing that, I was aging on my face. I was about to hit 30. I noticed that I was starting to get like a few soft gray hairs. I had more cellulite. My body was both thicker and softer at the same time. There was a roundness in my belly that was newer. Partly there were more changes than maybe there had been in the past, but also I was more attuned to them in a way that, as I shared, my younger self kind of wasn't keeping a check of this stuff. And now, because of all of the horrific harm that I put myself through, or that the norms of society had kind of unleashed onto me, I was noticing everything. And I was at the same time unlearning so many things. I was at the same time learning a nutrition degree. And I was also simultaneously unlearning so much of that, like in real time, learning and unlearning how we and I had come to define beauty and health and happiness and worthiness, so many elements of being a human. So I took a break from the conventional approaches that I'd used, and I spent some time exploring some other pursuits, as part of my unlearning, and where I often also brought, validly and kind of unfortunately, I could bring that same toxic energy to those other pursuits. So for example, yes, I left the gym in this unlearning phase, but I also took my approach of exercise is not necessarily movement, it's exercise. You've got to do it really hard. You've got to do it a lot. You've got to do it in a certain way. And I took that to a yoga studio. And that's deeply problematic on many layers. I was still very far from acceptance and from liberation in this kind of, I guess, deeper unlearning phase. So upon my return to the gym, which was in 2019, after this kind of period away of pursuing other experiences, I was chatting with my personal trainer about my goals. And this is the part in my story where the boyfriend that I had at 19 comes back as my trainer. So sitting inside this small assessment room, all, you know, 13 years after the fact, we had stayed loosely in touch as acquaintances, as a trainer-client relationship. But sitting in that small room, I remember I felt very criticized and I felt very judged just inherently because of what, you know, what had been left, the legacy of that comment specifically, and the approach of body focus that I saw in him. And I also, really importantly, I did not feel liberated enough to know that I deserved any better. It just felt like this is what it is. This is what I had to accept. We were discussing chin-ups as an exercise that I, in the past, had really enjoyed. He knew that. And I remember he mentioned to me, it's going to be harder unless I lost 5 kilos. Why 5 kilos? He didn't know my weight. I didn't know my weight either. We weren't discussing weight. We weren't talking about weight. And yet, again, I wasn't liberated enough to know I deserved better. I immediately felt deeply ashamed. I did push back, you know, at the point of unlearning I was at. I pushed back on his commentary. I challenged his weight-centric views. I asked him, you know, even if I agreed with this, even if I desired this, which I didn't, how sustainable could intentionally pursuing weight even be? Because for most of us, it's not. And what about the harm that can come with it, as he did know, and I had shared with him that I was recovering from? So yet, with all of that, and I'm really proud I was able to do that, but the shame lingered. I felt really exposed. I felt so judged and I felt hurt. And I guess thus began my deeper work even still, noticing something else I hadn't uncovered and I hadn't gotten to, which really at the core was unlearning my own fat bias, unlearning my preferences that have been forced on me toward the male gaze, because that is why that comment hurt. That is why that discussion hurt. You know, I needed to unlearn the oppression that I had internalized about myself and my worthiness, and I needed to meet myself in new ways. So in part two, I'm going to be sharing how this unlearning kind of unraveled, what it looked like, the challenges that I continue to face, and where I'm at now, what that looks like, what that feels like. And I'm going to talk about what I notice on reality TV and what the hell that's got to do with anything. So check out part two. I will see you there.